This is Dan Gamber of Metalhawk Press, publisher of this year's Philip K. Dick award-winning Terminal Mind by David Walton, and you're listening to 7 Star Podcast.
This is Maurice Broaddus, author of Orgy of Souls and Devil's Marionette and the upcoming Knights of Breton Court series, and you're listening to the 7 Star Podcast.
Straight from oblivion, the devil's calling from the bottom of a shot glass. My liquid requiem, awakened full of sin, and toxic visions haunt me at the end of night. Said, who are you to ask me to wash my dreams away? Who am I to beg you for another day?
Hey, this is horror author Michael West. You can find me at buymichaelwest.com, but you don't have to find Steven Zimmer. You're listening to him on the 7 Star Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the 5th edition of the 7th Star Press Podcast. You can always find us at 7thstarpress.blogspot.com, or you can always find us on iTunes as well. And in today's episode, I am very, very proud to be bringing you a writer who can write very well in multiple genres, who has a PhD in ancient history, who also happens to be the High Priestess of the Chocolate Cult. Very accomplished writer who already has several things published in fiction and academia as well. And I'm looking forward to bringing hopefully a few new readers into her audience. And because I had the pleasure of reviewing her book, Servants of Destiny, which was a great fantasy work, which I reviewed for the 7th Star Press blog site. And you can definitely go check that out after you get done hearing this. And I encourage you to pick up a copy of the book. But with no further ado, I'd like to bring to you Tammy Jo Eckhart, who will be joining us in just a few seconds here on the phone. So here we go.
Hi, this is Jackie Gamber, author of Red Heart, and you're listening to 7th Star Podcast.
Hi, this is author Nick Brown from werewolfforhire.com, and you're listening to the 7th Star Press Podcast.
And my guest today for the 5th episode of the 7th Star Press Podcast is the one and only Tammy Jo Eckhart, and we've got her here live. Welcome to the show, Tammy Jo.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I got the opportunity to do the blog interview with you and a review of your very excellent book, Servants of Destiny. But we probably have a few listeners who may not yet be familiar with who you are as a writer and also the fact that you are a multi-genre writer. So I think I'd leave it best to you to describe yourself and your writing and the kind of stuff you get into.
I am a geek, first and foremost, a geek in multiple senses of that word. So since I like all different genres, I write in all different genres. And when I write, I have two motivations for my writing. One is I have an idea, like a challenge. I might challenge myself to write something about X. And the second way that I write is that I'm driven by this sort of internal inspiration. I literally dream sort of my stories, and so when I sit down to write, I tend to be a really fast writer because the stories have in part already been mentally written, so like the characters in the story just kind of grows organically from someplace in my mind. Whatever I write, I want to talk about the truth, revealing the truth about human nature, human relationships, and sometimes the truth isn't nice. Sometimes it's quite unpleasant, quite harsh, quite difficult. to read or to hear or to think about, but it's all part of how human beings work, how we function, how we act. And so I try to tell the truth, and I try to tell it in a fashion that's appropriate for the characters and for the story. I don't like reading things and suddenly you hit a section of the story where it feels like you're reading a different book or you're reading something written by a different author. I like it to be solid and to flow really smoothly. And I work on that by having, you know, other people listen to me. I do a lot of reading out loud. I can catch a lot of things that way. So, kind of who I am. I'm very creative, and I try to tell the truth, and I try to work through inspiration. Is that sort of what you're looking for?
Oh, definitely. And that's something I think that you have a good example of it with the book Servants of Destiny, the one I reviewed for the blog site, because it definitely had very powerful characters and it definitely was not afraid to take chances. And it was an interesting book because the thing I liked about it was that it worked as a fantasy novel while also having a very strong erotic element, which I think is a very big achievement for a writer to be able to pull off, to have something that's genuinely a fantasy, you know, genre novel that has the, you know, a big erotic element as opposed to, you know, just being, you know, erotic, you know, with a dose of fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And when I wrote it, I could have written it, you know, and toned down the sensual content and the sexual content, but the way that worked, the magic system that worked there, is that you have to acquire energy in order to use magic. And there are lots of different ways you can acquire energy. And I thought using sex as a way to create and then tap into energy was a very positive way to acquire energy. I mean, you know, other ways would not be so pleasant. For example, you know, in some stories, you have characters where, you know, they kill people, and that's, they acquire their life force. Or like with vampires, you drain people and you acquire their life force. And I thought actually using this creative way, you know, something that requires at least two people to do together that should be pleasurable for both people, creates this energy that then's used in magic. And for me, that's really what it all focused about. Every time there's something sexual or intimate in that story, especially when they're on their big journey, you know, you have to have this big, the hero's journey as part of the story. It's because she needs energy to do magic. It's not simply because she wants to, or because he wants to, or because, you know, in the case of them, she's attempting to, you know, promote her power and authority over him. And then later in the story, that changes as they start to develop feelings, and there's real intimacy there. They grow to actually respect each other and to like each other, and that then changes a little bit. But each time, there's a reason for it. It's not simply there to titillate the audience, because I don't really think the audience is always going to be titillated, and I don't think it should be titillated. I think there are moments when I want the audience to be horrified by what's going on in the story. That's true of everything I write. And sometimes your audience reacts in ways you didn't predict, however.
Well, I think the magic system definitely was consistent and it worked, which is something that, you know, is a criticism I have in some fantasy novels, you know, where, you know, they break the rules and so forth, but it was consistent all throughout. And the other thing, you know, mentioned the power and authority, that, you know, that your lead character had over the male. And that also, I think, drew upon another weapon in your arsenal, which a lot of people may not realize about you, but you have a PhD in ancient history. So how did that play in crafting the kind of culture, you know, that, you know, with you know, slavery as an institution within the novel?
Yeah, I have a PhD, as you said, in ancient history, but beyond that, I've helped, you know, teach, studied, used, done research in, you know, medieval history through the Renaissance period. I've even taught some American history and modern European history. And, you know, throughout human society, power and authority they're huge. I mean, they are really the driving forces to what happens, to what decisions happen. you know, you might hear things like, oh, you know, we need to acquire land and that's what drives war. No, really it's not. It's the idea that you have the power to take that land, the idea that you have the authority to make that decision. And that can be applied to any situation, land or money or, you know, water or whatever it is, or religion. That's just sort of the excuse to exercise your power and authority. And so everything I've studied sort of really worked for me, and then trying to figure out, well, how would a society function? Because if your society doesn't function, it's going to fall. And here in the story for Servants of Destiny, we have a society that's been around for hundreds of years. It's built on the ashes of a huge war, which, you know, if I ever get a chance to write other books in that universe, you'd discover more about. But it has to be functional. Everyone has to get something out of it. Otherwise, they won't support it. And that's true for even the lowest person on the totem pole in that society. At some level, they've got to be getting something from it, even if they're not conscious of what that is. And also, in my PhD, I have a minor in gender and sexuality, history of gender and sexuality, and also folklore. And so I can kind of pull on both of those to create, like, the inner myth of the story, the religious, you know, prophecies in the story, and to think about, you know, how do people relate to each other. So, you know, and it's something I both consciously and unconsciously do.
Yeah, because that dynamic, I mean, especially the relationships, and then, you know, your lead character with her mentor, you know, that was kind of guiding her along during the quest. I mean, some of that stuff was really powerful and well woven together. And so, yeah, I could see where you definitely drew off of, you know, your academic background to kind of give it a real organic reality.
Yeah, thanks. I wanted it to seem real. I wanted it to seem like a society you'd either want to become part of, or you'd want to run really far away from, one or the other.
Well, certainly, one of your lead characters was definitely trying to run away from it at the beginning of it.
Yeah, and a lot of stories, people just kind of accept their position in life, and I didn't think that made sense. It didn't make sense for what she would need for this quest. It wouldn't make sense for what was going to be required to get them through the various, you know, challenges they have to meet and overcome, and not just simply overcome, but they must succeed really well to get over it. Otherwise, you know, it's not just her kingdom that's at stake. It's, in some cases, you know, the fabric of the universe. You know, they're opening, closing, you know, rifts in reality, and if those aren't closed, there could be consequences beyond that. So she can't just have someone who's just like, yes, I accept this. This is my role in life. Plus, honestly, that's really boring to read.
And with the male character, you know, with his kind of, you know, more or less being subordinate, you know, within the power structure, and of course, you know, him being, you know, having a slave status. The one thing that I thought was strong about that character is the fact that he was strong. When I think the temptation would be to make him kind of a wimp, but you actually did a good job of making him, you know, be a strong character with a lot of competency in his own right.
Yeah, and I hope he gains that as well as the story goes on. He both becomes more accepting of his lot in life, and at the same time becomes a stronger person, because he can kind of then see, okay, well, if I accept this position, what can I do to become the best possible, you know, person in that position? She needs a thief. How can I become the best thief? She needs, you know, a fellow fighter. How can I become a better fighter? You know, she needs a good lover. How can I become a good lover? And, you know, that requires growth and change on his part. Also on her part, I hope that it comes out that, you know, she's one way in the beginning of the story, but by the end of the story, she's different too.
Oh, in my opinion, you know, having read it and thoroughly enjoyed it, I think both characters grew a lot. I think, you know, definitely he... In my opinion, did handle the deck of cards he was given, and once he, you know, knew what deck of cards he was playing with, as you said, he found ways to maximize that and be the best in every possible situation. And I thought with her, I mean, there was definitely a growth arc and a kind of a, you know, a coming into her own, you know, by the time that, you know, I don't want to, you know, give away any plot spoilers, but by the time, you know, the developments at the end of the story took place.
So, and what's interesting, though, is that readers get different things out of it. So I've had not a small number of readers send me emails or come to me when I, like, give readings or I go to a few conventions, and they'll say, you know, wow, this is just a great romance novel. And I'll just look at them like, what are you talking about? Because I certainly didn't write it thinking, I'm going to write a romance novel. I thought, I want to write a fantasy novel which sort of inverts the normal gender roles that we see in a lot of fantasy novels, but which doesn't belittle the person, as you said, in the subordinate position. Because I think everyone has a position in life, and everyone should take pride in their positions. You know, whether, as I've told my students, whether you go on to win a Nobel Prize or you're a janitor, both of your roles are necessary for the society to function, and you should take pride in whatever you do and do what will make you happy. So somehow people are reading the novel and thinking, oh, it's a romance novel, and I'm like, okay, you know.
I think it. Well, I do think it does have a very nice romantic element to it. But that's where I think that you really did succeed in walking a fine line, in that it, you know, overall, you know, it's still, you know, a true, you know, epic kind of fantasy quest kind of story. You know, that also has, you know, that, and that's where, you know, I think the fine line is that you were able to you know, definitely keep on.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Because when I'm writing, I don't necessarily think like, you know, I don't think about like a fine line, like there are multiple genres I'm working in. I tend to be so focused on the characters and their story and making it internally consistent and to make them interesting and to make them grow, that I sometimes become oblivious to the fact that maybe something I'm doing here would annoy people reading in a certain genre of literature. So if I can succeed in doing that, that's great, because I'm not always consciously trying to do that.
Yeah, I didn't think you were, and I think the best writers don't, you know, consciously, you know, focus on, you know, that when they're, you know, the basic is, you know, I think is just somebody that, you know, is telling a good story and they're bringing all their elements into it, and it turns out like it turns out. So, and I think that's, you know, but in the process, I think you did achieve that. I think, you know, you achieved a great fantasy story that also has a very compelling, you know, erotic and romantic element, and I definitely commend you for that, and wholeheartedly encourage fantasy fans that may be listening to pick up a copy of this book. So do you want to give some information on how folks can pick up that book?
If you go to Amazon.com, that's the basic place to pick up that book, and it's called Servants of Destiny, or you can just look up my name and you can see all the books I've done. If you want, you can go through my website, and the easiest web address for that is just www.thetammyjoe.com.
And that's
links to everything. So.
And that's the as in thetammyjoe.com. Yeah, just I always spell things out just to be absolutely sure that, you know, our listeners can, you know, definitely find you, because that's the whole hope that I have, is that they will find you and give your books a shot. And as far as your just real briefly, Servants of Destiny is not obviously your only book. Give us a quick overview of your whole published collection right now, as far as you know, fiction and so forth.
Well, currently people can buy 4 books. Servants of Destiny is the novel, and then there are 3 collections of short stories. One is called Aeroscape, one is called Sweet Memories of Pain and the Future of Pleasure, and the other one is called Mistress Loves Me, This I Know. And they're all short stories in all different genres, ranging from contemporary fiction to fairly hardcore science fiction, fantasy, and even some gothic horror in there as well.
And obviously you're the type of person that never rests. You're always busy and up to something and have new projects and irons in the fire. So, you know, you mentioned to me that you have a new book that's going to hopefully come out in early 2010 on Small Press, Beyond the Softness of His Fur.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your upcoming project.
Yeah, it's a science fiction novella, so it's about 40,000 words long, and it looks at how science and business get ahead of morality. It's the story of a woman named Emily who, for some reason, she doesn't understand this, but her company, when she gets a promotion, is very adamant that she should sort of jump on the bandwagon of this newfangled thing called an aerosmorph, which is a humanoid creature that's been created by science, which is has some animal traits to it. And, and since she works in advertising, she wants to, go to the best place, sort of advertising for the company and everything. And she goes there, and that begins her journey in uncovering the corruption within her own company and the corruption within her society, when it now has the power to basically make and manipulate life and to sell it to the highest bidder. And it's a situation which she grows increasingly uncomfortable with over time, and some fairly horrific things happen, but also some incredibly funny things happen because the story is told from her viewpoint, but also the viewpoint of this creature that she buys as he, leaves the laboratory for the first time and gets to experience, think of it as our world maybe, 50, 100 years in the future. And he looks at things very differently than we do.
Well, you mentioned to me before we started the interview that even your publisher had quite a emotive reaction when reading through it.
Yeah, he liked it a lot. He gave it to his spouse, who is actually a scientist. So I sort of knew that, and I was like, oh no, she's gonna rip it apart for the science. But he told me that she laughed at all the appropriate places, and she almost cried, out loud at all the appropriate places as well. And that's when he knew that he really wanted this. He wanted to put this book out there. But I imagine it will be considered quite edgy because it deals with a lot of, edgy, difficult subjects, which, I look at newspaper and TV, and, I'm married to a physicist. I see us right on the edge of having to confront these issues today, and so I'm sort of confronting them in the story.
And are we allowed to mention the publisher? Is this a publicly announced project yet?
Yes. It's Python University. They did Mr. Slesny, This I Know, and so there'll be a link for that book, and you'll be able to find this book from them as well. And they're trying to decide right now if they want to do a print book, a traditional book, or an ebook, or both.
So it'll be pending format as far as whether it'll be ebook or regular or both, then.
Yeah. So, and I'm kind of wary about ebooks myself, but they seem to be gaining in popularity.
Now, do you like the Kindle format? Just curious. I love to get authors' opinions on this.
I have a Kindle. I actually have a Kindle because I'm one of the other things I do in my life is I'm a book reviewer and a product reviewer. And so I got a Kindle as part of being a judge for a ebook contest. And it's okay. I mean, the size of it is similar to reading, your standard mass-produced paperback. But man, it just goes through energy like crazy. Even if you don't use it, like once a week, you have to charge it. But it turns out that it's okay not to charge it. It's not going to lose its memory or stuff. So I tend to charge it before I need to use it for something.
Yeah, because I was, I'm just curious, because especially with it being a very proprietary format that appears to be kind of designed to protect authors' properties against piracy. I think, because it's very, I think it'd be very difficult to pirate on the Kindle format.
Yeah, that is something I really like about it. Unlike some other ebook formats I've had where it's basically you get a PDF that you put on your computer. And frankly, you could send it to other people if you wanted to. And that does concern me. Not just copyright issues, and it's certainly not a financial concern. But you know, I put a lot of myself into these stories. All of these stories contain, you know, part of my mind, part of my heart, and in some cases, parts of my soul in them. And yeah, I want that protected. I want credit for my work. Just as if I came out with a new translation of a document from Babylon, I'd want credit for that work.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, because, I mean, obviously, especially in the small press world, I mean, as you know, it's not definitely not the financial rewards that compel you to write. I mean, certainly, you know, it's more, you know, it's definitely more of the heart of it and the, you know, the artistic aspect. And so, you know, I mean, with something like, you know, piracy issues, you know, I'm sure that, you know, that's something that, you know, is a matter of just, you know, respect for the author.
They haven't decided yet which format they want to go with, because 2009, and I've heard this from multiple publishers and writers, has been a really bad year in terms of book sales, just in general. And I know that from going to conventions, you know, sitting with my own books, that, yeah, book sales by and large have just been down because people are saving their money. So, you know, as a geek, I really can't think of much I'd rather spend my money on than books personally, but...
Now, that does bring you to an interesting point, though, with the, you know, the downturn in, you know, book sales and the fact that a lot of large, you know, there's a lot of things in flux. A lot of large publishers are shrinking their rosters and or, you know, kind of trimming down. And then you've got, you know, of course, you know, explosion of small press going on at the same time because of, you know, the, you know, some technologies that are enabling, you know, people to, you know, form, you know, publishing companies easier than in the past. And so what is your take on, you know, I guess the, you know, the things that are positive about small press publishers who you've worked for? And then I know you also are, you know, definitely are somebody that's familiar with, you know, big press as well.
Well, with small press, it can be more personal. I mean, you can have a company that actually cares about the author's input on, let's say, the cover or the back blurb. They are oftentimes more willing to take, you know, risks, like put out something that's more edgy or something that's not done in a traditional fashion, like maybe tells things in a different voice or a different tense than what's normally done for that genre. And so I think you can get really creative things. Unfortunately, they oftentimes lack the distribution capabilities. You know, my first three books, I could walk into any bookstore. You know, I could walk into even a Barnes & Noble or a Borders or, you know, name the big-name bookstore that you can just physically walk into, and I could pick my books up off the shelf. And the last few books I had, you can't do that. So, like, you're only able to find them either through the publisher or through Amazon, or at a convention if I happen to be there or the publisher happens to be there. And I think that really restricts who can find books, because I know a lot of people who, when they go into a bookstore, they go to browse, and they might, you know, they have a few authors that they read continuously and they check that out, but then they sort of stay in that section of the bookstore and they'll just kind of look around. They'll look at covers, they'll look at the back blurbs, and they'll go, oh, well, you know, I'll get this. I've never heard of this person, but it sounds interesting. I'll get it. And if you can only get it online, it's not the same. It's not the same as browsing in the bookstore. So I think that's a real disadvantage to small presses, is if they don't have the distribution or the ability to market, because, you know, there are a lot of great-selling books out there whom, frankly, are not terribly well-written, are not terribly interesting, but what they have is this huge marketing campaign. I mean, I saw... I can't remember what book it was for, but even just last night on TV, there was some sci-fi book, you know, saying, now coming out, blah, 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 by someone I've never heard of before. And, you know, the book itself could be really poorly written, but the fact that, you know, millions of viewers saw it last night is going to generate sales. So I think that's the biggest disadvantage small presses have. The greatest advantage is that they have more creativity. What would be really good is if you can get into an imprint, you know, a small imprint of a larger publishing company, they might be able to tap into some of its marketing and distribution, but still be willing, you know, to go a little bit more creative, be a little more personal with the authors and give them a little more one-on-one help. Because as good as, even if you are the world's best writer, you need to be edited.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I think that that is definitely something that, you know, that, you know, like I said, a larger press, I think, definitely can bring to the table, you know, with a writer is, you know, having a, you know, a very, very good, you know, editing, you know, type support. And, you know, now we all have our fingers crossed, and I know we can't mention any names, but I did want to kind of just kind of, you know, give a little bit of a teaser to the audience, but you do have a, something that's, out shopping right now, in terms of major publishers.
Yeah. I've been working on this story idea for about 2 years on and off, which is very slow for me in terms of writing, but I had other projects. I finished my PhD. you know, I've been applying to jobs, and that's, you know, applying to jobs in academia is almost a full-time job in and of itself some years. And so I had this idea to explore how changes in society equal changes in personal relationships, how they affect personal relationships. In order to look at that, I knew I needed something that was going to span a long period of time. And I've always liked vampires, so I decided to do it with vampires. And so the book is, at this moment, called Day and Tonight. And it looks at the relationships that vampires have with mortals in our world, where vampires, you know, are just creatures of fiction. They don't actually exist. Don't know. They're not real. They're fantasies. That's folklore. And then what happens when vampires say, forget this. We're tired of this. We're real. We're here. When we're taking over, and how that changes their relationships. And in some cases, it corrupts them, and in some cases, it makes them into almost heroic figures as they realize that they need to protect now the people that they were basically just living off of before.
Wow, that sounds like a really, really good book, and definitely, definitely, I'll be picking up a copy once it comes out. But I'm definitely hoping that, you know, the that one does, you know, get a chance to come out through a major publisher. I'm definitely hoping that for you. So, stay tuned.
So because vampires are almost always hot, you know. But I've also not just used my degree in history, but I really used my minor in folklore for this because I'm redoing the entire vampire mythos. Using Sumerian mythology and culture as the sort of base stone, the focal point to begin.
Well, that's what I was about to say. You know, vampires are, you know, of course, a very, you know, popular thing right now, but the Tammy Joe approach is something that, you know, I would definitely want to see.
Yeah, I they're not going to twinkle or glitter in the sunlight. I guarantee you that. They're not going to angst about their immortality.
All right. Well, you also, I don't want to, you know, pass by the other thing that's a part of your very busy life, and that is you are actually the high priestess of the chocolate cult.
Yes, yes.
And I think that is so cool. And actually, as we were preparing for this interview, you gave me the update that you are actually in the process of preparing for the first official pilgrimage of the chocolate cult. So I know everybody wants to know. What about that?
You know, I'm sure you've heard of chocolate festivals, chocolate celebrations. We have one in the town I live in. It's a week-long chocolate festival, a week of chocolate it's called. But in a lot of locations, these festivals, I think, are really just attempts to draw in tourism and to sell, you know, to get chocolate companies their products to sell. And that's fine. I'm not anti-capitalist or anything. But part of the message that I have on the chocolate cult is that you need to think about what you're doing. In chocolate is just another way of saying you need to think about what you're doing with your life. But I wanted to do something, and I'm always looking around to get involved with things that have to do with chocolate. And there's a community not far from where I live, about 30 minutes drive, and they're having their second annual chocolate walk. And so I investigated, I talked to the person in charge, I looked up information about the organization running it, and it's the Humane Society of that county. And they have a very high success rate for getting the animals that they take care of into new homes, something like around a 90% success rate. And this is like one of their big fundraisers that they do every year to help fund them. And it's great, basically. Well, now you have to pay $20 to go, but before November 1st is only $15. But for $20, you get to go and three different chocolate tours, places that, you know, they make their chocolate there on site, will give you free samples. And if no one's heard of the Chocolate Cult before, if you go there and you read some of the things I review, you know, that's a killer deal. $20 for a minimum of 30 pieces of handmade chocolate is insane, because quality handmade chocolate is not cheap. And so you get to go hang out with friends. And in this case, I'm going with an acolyte, and people are free to go with us. They just have to go to the blog and let us know we bought our tickets and we want to carpool, because, you know, every time you carpool, every little bit in the environment you save is one more cacao plant that can be planted, I say. So I'm looking forward to it.
So not only do people get a great bargain on chocolate, but they also get to hang out with Tammy Joe. So that's an extra incentive for sure. And now, if people want to find the epicenter of the Chocolate Cult, what is the exact web address on that one?
Okay. It's a blog spot. Let me check it here for you, because I never remember off the top of my head. Like you said, I have so many irons in the fire at any given time. It's http://thechocolatecult.blogspot.com, and that's the address.
So the chocolate.
Or you can just look up the Chocolate Cult, and links to it and links to my articles are all over the place now through Google and Yahoo and probably on Bing too by now.
Yeah, like you said, you have a lot of irons in the fire, and as we, you get down to the toward the end of the interview, I mean, I wanted to, you know, just again endorse, you know, your book Servants of Destiny, which, you know, and then you have other titles that are available right now, and then you have coming up in early 2010, Beyond the Softness of His Fur. Hopefully, we'll get the good word that, you know, that your Day Unto Night gets picked up by a large publisher. And do you have any anything else coming up in the near future as far as appearances or anything like that that you'd like to mention?
Beyond the pilgrimage, which is a fun thing, I have one reading scheduled for December for a group down in Evansville, Indiana. And then twice a month now online on Second Life. I don't know if some of the listeners are familiar with what Second Life is. It's like an online community. I do readings twice a month, the third Friday of the month and the fourth Thursday of the month. I do live online readings there. So I'm kind of busy, but I love to go to things, and, you know, if people are within, like, driving distance for us, a couple hours driving distance, you know, don't be shy, invite me, and, you know, get to meet me and part of my family at least, and hear me read. And I'm told I'm very good at live readings.
All right. Well, yeah, from the everything from, you know, live readings to new books to the books that are out there to the Chocolate Cult, yeah, it sounds like you're going to be very, very busy in the next foreseeable future, and hopefully for many, many years to come. And definitely enjoyed having you with us on the podcast today, and we're definitely going to have you back for sure. And I encourage people to look up the review that we did of Servants of Destiny. But it was just outstanding. I think you're a great talent, and I think you are a very, very versatile writer, and you're able to write in different genres well, which I think is not a common thing at all. And I definitely hope that people do give you a chance and go out there and give one of your books a try and find out more about you, because I think they'll be very, very happy they did so.
All right. Thank you.
And so thanks for joining us today, and we will be having you back very soon, Tammy Joe.
All right, great. I look forward to it.
So there you have it, a full interview with Tammy Joe Eckhart. And as you can tell, just definitely a fascinating and engaging personality, Very, very gifted writer, and I encourage all of you listening to definitely go up and pick up one of her books right now. Her career is definitely on the rise, and I can tell you for sure that Servants of Destiny is a really, really good read. And be sure to check out the review that I did on that at the Seventh Star Press blog site just a little ways back. And please join us next time here on the Seventh Star Press podcast. So thank you for joining us in Episode 5. We'll get you out with some good music here with the band Zero King. And thank you very, very much for joining us.
Hi, this is Mike D'Ambrosio, the author of the Fractured Time Trilogy and Space Frontiers series. You're listening to the Seventh Star Podcast.
This is Jason Sizemore with Apex Publications, and you're listening to the Seventh Star Podcast. And hey, visit apexbookcompany.com after the show for more fantastic science fiction, fantasy, and horror. I did it once again. I let you pull me in.